Please mind the gap between the train and the platform.
This is Barbican Station. Hello and welcome back to Barbican Station, the show that looks at all things Mick Herron. This episode, we're talking about Slow Horses, Season 3, Episode 3. I'm really excited to talk about this one, and joining me is returning guest from last season, Mary. Mary is going to be talking all about this episode. We watched it together. Lots of hot takes here, so get ready. Mary, thanks for coming back on and talking with me again.
Thanks for having me back on.
All right. So what do you think of this episode overall? We got that kind of twofer at the start, and now we're kind of getting into the full meat of the season and seeing what exactly is going on. You've read the book, so you have a passing familiarity with this story, mm-hmm. I assume, although it's been a while. What do you think?
It has been a while. There were things that I had forgotten from the book, and then, you know, it's a little different in some ways. Yeah, exciting at the beginning where things had left off from the previous episode, and you're left at the end with also sort of like, oh, well, what's about to happen next? Which is very much how you read Mick Herron books so quickly, because you get to the end of one chapter and it's like you have to keep going. Because there's like that, oh, wait, I wanna find out what's going to happen. So you just sort of keep plowing through.
Yeah, I thought this was a great episode. I talked with Matthew Bradford last episode about some changes that they made, in particular the use of spider web in mm-hmm. this one, because, you know, he ends up kind of out of commission in this book. We don't really see him in action, but they kind of shifted that around and gave him a different role mm-hmm. as this kind of slimy guy. He's playing a role that I think Sly kind of has in the book, but it is perfect for him given that he has this relationship with River again. And seeing the two of them interact in this episode, I thought was the highlight. I don't know what you thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of love to hate him, right? Like and I think there's a part, I mean, obviously River's taken in by the whole story.
Tiger team, that he gives.
Yeah.
So yeah, Freddie Fox is the actor that plays him, and man, he just goes for it in this one, right?
Yes.
Knowing it's kind of a, you know, and full spoilers here, so if you haven't watched the third episode, go do that now. But wow, he kind of goes for it in his swan song, right?
Yes. And River gets taken in, and honestly, as a viewer, you know, but you also, you're like, ugh, you really feel like it's true. To a degree, the way he plays it.
I think he did a great job of that, because I think there was that twist at the end there, which we'll get to, I think really mm-hmm. worked for the episode mm-hmm. and really gave it a kick, because there were even more twists to come. So, but let's you know, rewind it back to the beginning, because we kind of start off with Ingrid Tierney, who we haven't really seen a lot of in the show, mm-hmm. but we get this moment where we see her going to talk to Peter Judd, who's the Home Secretary. She's got her resignation ready.
Right.
And of course, Judd being Judd kind of turns the tables, right? mm-hmm. And really kind of turns the screws.
Well, and just very much like on brand, right? Just the fact that he sees the opportunity to have somebody under his thumb, because she wants to resign because something happens on her watch, right? That she feels like is unacceptable. And he would rather keep her and hold that over her and have that, right? That's very much his move. And it also feels really unexpected to her, but like I said, utterly on brand for him.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's just so many great moments in their little thing. And, you know, they did a nice job. It was a perfect way to kind of recap where we left off. We finally get a full explanation of what a tiger team is, because mm-hmm. we left that last episode where they're like, it's a tiger team. And everybody's like, a tiger team? A tiger team? Oh, a tiger team. And then everybody watching, if you haven't read the books, you're kind of like, well, what's a tiger team? Mm-hmm. And we find out that it's people kind of sent in to test for problems.
And a very clear failure, right, on the part of the service in the way that went down.
Well, it's so appropriate to choose Slough House as the one to prove that, you know, you go after the failures to prove the failure.
Right. I mean, the whole thing is sort of a setup, right? I mean, it's so Judd has made this power move, right? And and then maybe set out with the idea that this is going to leave Tierney under his thumb then.
Oh, for sure. Definitely that was the whole plan. He was, mm-hmm. he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. And interesting then to hear, I guess those are the kinds of things that when you've read the book, you're sort of following along in a way that somebody who is unfamiliar with the books might have a very different number of ideas about what that actually means.
Well, and there's some great lines in there because Tierney's telling him, you know, they broke in to steal the PM's vetting file. And Judd says, did they get it? And she's like, no. And he's like, shame. Is it true that he makes his wife piss on him, or is that just a rumor I started? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, right there, I mean, you know exactly, like, if you hadn't seen the last seasons or you'd kind of forgotten, we're setting the bar right where Judd is at, you know. You mm-hmm. know exactly how big of a slime ball this guy is.
Yeah, and he's not one that you love and hate. You just sort of hate him, right? Whereas I think Spider is one you kind of love to hate. He's sort of just like, no, kind of hate.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing redeeming.
Yes. Well, and Heron wrote him, and I think that they carry it over here in the show, you know, as this avatar for Boris Johnson, but like also just the avatar for every worst thing that you think about a politician, right? Everything that you think all the politicians are doing that is at the absolute worst, that's where they were at. And so mm-hmm. I think he is utterly perfect in that role, which is great. And, you know, it's something I remember we mentioned, I think it was last season, maybe. He also plays like this kind of like lovable character on All Creatures Great and Small.
Right.
So he manages to kind of, you know, bounce back and forth, but you utterly believe him as the piece of garbage politician, right?
Yeah. Knowing that there was a nod to Boris Johnson with this character, it's the way this actor carries himself and plays it, he's a lot, he comes across more smooth or more slick in some ways than Boris mm-hmm. Johnson does.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of shtick maybe to get, to sort of gather power or kind of make those political moves. But it's not on the nose, which is, you know, it's nice too.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, and especially given the way real world kind of has moved, I think even Heron has had to try and kind of modulate his Peter Judd because things got so crazy in British political world that he couldn't even like keep up with that. So I think that is something that they've, having that separation, they were able to do that at the start versus whereas mm-hmm. I think if Heron knew where things would go, which I don't blame him for not, he might have done something similar. So that leads to the next part, which I thought was really, really crazy, because we jump into Standish, right? And so we get Standish. Mm. They're going to transfer her over to give her back now that the Tiger team has proven what they needed to prove.
Mm-hmm.
But it all kind of goes wrong because obviously Donovan and his crew have a different agenda. And mm-hmm. I love that this chieftain guy is there to pick her up. They pull a gun, he escapes, and Standish, you know, kind of helps with the escape, which I thought was great because it shows her as kind of an active person. She's not going to be just this passive hostage, which was great. But it ends with that great line because they capture the chieftain guy and they're driving off. And she's like, so am I now an actual hostage? Right? I think it's just, that's just that great kicker before they cut to the credits. I mean, everything about Standish is great. And I'm hoping that we get even more of her in the next episode because she's a great actress and she's just so funny.
Well, and just so much of these little moments where she shows she's got some skills as an agent in the field, even though that's not what she's doing. So in the safe house where she recognizes that this is actually a home that belongs to one of her captors, right? Like she pieces things together and pays attention to details. And she's just a lot more clever than anyone probably gives her credit for.
Agreed. Well, and she's a watcher, right? She's somebody who can look and she listens. I think that's something else, right? Like so few people, I mean, definitely in Slough House, you get the sense that she's the one that knows each of them. She can read them so perfectly. Mm-hmm. Right. And knows everything about them in a way that is helpful to those people versus Lam, who knows everything about what those people are doing, but to their detriment, right? She's somebody who can twist things and knows and like is trying to work with them rather than against.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the kind of agent that she fades into like the wallpaper, right? Like you just, she's not like Lam, who is unforgettable, right? She's someone who I think picks up on things and gathers little bits of information. I think that is something that Lam absolutely values about her. And at the same time, where they're very, very different, he very quickly noticed she was gone, that something was wrong, that something was irregular about, you know, her not being there and so on, that clued him in well ahead of anyone else, right? So in a way, they have this sort of, I don't know, symbiotic is the right word, but it's almost like they complement each other in a way that works really well for both of them, even though I think they get under each other's skin like a great deal.
Yes, although I don't know that I'd want Lamb under my skin. That's kind of scary, but yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Jumping onto another scene that I thought was so good. I mean, all of the Marcus and Shirley stuff this season has been so good. We talked about last episode. Last season, Shirley just wasn't quite matching what you envisioned from the book, or at least what I envisioned. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I did, and I feel like this is sort of approaching the sort of character that you come to, I don't know if love is the word from the books, but that you sort of appreciate her, these certain qualities about her, and you see a little bit more of that. But I think that it's the dynamic between the two of them that is really fun and interesting to watch, and that it seems like she's got Marcus's number is the way it always sort of plays out. But then there's little moments where it's like, oh no, he has her number just as much. He's just a little quieter about it because she's loud about everything.
Right. But I think she also kind of enjoys that, you know, and I mean, definitely in the books, you get the sense that she enjoys the partner buddy thing. She's not quite that there in the show yet, but I you just like, you get the sense that there's such a rapport between the two that you can't not like each other. Right. Yeah. I mean, they're just really firing on all cylinders. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they're definitely sort of bonded in their hatred of Ho, right? So there's that little bit of like camaraderie that they have in sort of directing some hatred in his direction. So
yeah, oh for sure, yeah. So they're staking out Donovan's apartment because they figured that part out, right? And Shirley is giving Marcus crap about his CDs, his audio selections, right? I mean, wasn't one? I think one of them is Elton John or something like that, right? You know, they're just giving him a hard time. And so they break into Donovan's apartment. They're just like, we're just going to go in there, right?
Didn't she just go in?
Yeah, well, she starts like messing with the door and then she starts kicking it down, right? And Marcus is like, what are you doing? We don't have a warrant. She's like, we don't need a warrant. Whatever. You know, I mean, just she's so impulsive. I mean, the thing that I think that this season you're seeing is she's so impulsive in like a not constructive way.
Right.
That is really fun, right?
The not constructive on the surface, but actually ends up being beneficial, right? In the long run, it seems. Mm-hmm. They gather information or they get something from her rash kinds of decisions in some cases.
Or she, you know, you get the pleasure of her punching Roddy Ho out.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, yeah. Yeah.
Definitely deserved and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they go in there and she's stolen one of his CDs to do coke in the bathroom, which is just like... Because we didn't really see her as a coke addict in the last season, I don't think. So, but we fully get it here, right?
I'm trying to remember if there was a reference to that being her
backstory,
reason why she was at Slough House.
But I think the reason she was in Slough House is because she was punching somebody else, like a supervisor she got into it with. So I don't think that we've seen her drug addiction. And, you know, one of the themes of this season and the book really was addiction, right? I mean, we see basically everybody is kind of dealing with some sort of an addiction. Mm-hmm. You've got Catherine, who's a recovering alcoholic. Obviously, Shirley and the drugs, gambling for Marcus. You've got Louisa, who's also kind of dealing with this. I don't know. I think it's a little too much to call it sex addiction, but she's drinking too much. She's kind of spiraling. You know, addiction isn't too far off for her, potentially. Yeah. And then River, with his addiction to just action and, you know, impulsive behaviors, right? I mean, he's addicted to being the center of attention almost.
Sure. I don't know if it's that or just like addiction to, I mean, he's been his entire life kind of immersed in the world of spycraft, right? With his grandfather. Yeah. And so I think to some degree, it's I don't know who I am or what I'm doing if I'm not doing this. And so he's always kind of inserting himself into the middle of things for that probably dopamine hit that he gets when he's, probably doing something stupid, but also I think he gets a real rush from spycraft, and that he seeks those opportunities.
I think you're right, you know, and especially we see that in this episode, right, where he's getting this beatdown, just vicious yes, beatdown.
And he keeps egging them on.
Right. And so, you know, I think that's really pinned something important about him, is that he's reveling in this. He's back in it, right? You know, yeah. He was not, like we saw at the very beginning of the first episode, where he is hauling files around and you can see mm-hmm. his disdain about that. He is in it. It doesn't matter that he screwed it all up and, you know, made the wrong call. He's in it, and they're beating him up because he's doing something right. And so mm-hmm. I think that's very much a part of it, right?
Yeah. And I think that there's in that whole scene, there's a really interesting, like, he doubles down on trust that Lamb has his back. And he keeps saying, oh, no, any minute they're coming in. Like, he keeps egging them on. And he exudes sort of some level of confidence that Lamb is going to take care of him. Which is just interesting when you think about, like, who do you trust when you're a spy? Why would he wholeheartedly trust that that's going to happen?
Yeah. Well, I think, if nothing else, he's figured out Lamb's code, which is, if he supervises somebody, he's not going to leave that person behind. Now, that being said, River completely screwed up at the start, right? So, like, why? His level of confidence in Lamb saving him, I think, is a little bit a wish and a hope versus a certainty, you know, at least in my mind. I could easily see Lamb leaving him in there for a couple of days, right? But I think the other part of it is knowing Catherine needs their help, mm-hmm. I think, is why he feels maybe a little bit stronger on that. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess he has that sense of responsibility for not picking up on the potential that something has gone wrong for Catherine, right? Like, he was there, mm-hmm. he saw something, and he didn't say something, right? That's the, if you see something, say something, is that the thing yeah. at the airport?
Yes.
And I think he feels sort of tremendously guilty about that, but I think in both his faith that Lamb's going to come bail him out of this horrible beat down that he's getting, and also in his feeling of responsibility to Catherine, there's sort of a, and I don't know if this is coming from his experience with his grandfather, but there's some, like, streak of loyalty that he has to people, and that in some ways he gets himself into trouble because I think he will trust or expect that loyalty. I mean, this happens with Spider, right? Like, he expects a little bit of that in return, and it causes some poor judgment.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that whole sequence with Nick Duffy, where he's just beating him down, I mean, it was like, it was confidence to the crazy extreme. Mm. And then he talks to his minion, and he's like, I do want to warn you, I've got very tough balls. And then he gets kicked right in them. It was, like, self-destructive to a certain extent.
Oh, sure. He can't help himself. It's like, that's the thing when he just seems like he can't help himself, egging them on.
He does get out, right? And then there's some great moment. He meets up with Lamb, and Duffy is talking to Lamb. And there's this great moment that I hope anybody listening, please meme this out, where River just kind of, like, gives this, like, kind of thumbs up, like just, like, goofy thumbs up to them. Yeah. It's like, man, you know they are going to break his neck the next time they see him. Yeah. Like, he's like self-destructive to a crazy degree. Mm-hmm. Just totally wild.
Well, and then he gets in the cab with Lamb thinking, okay, we're going.
Yes, let's wherever, go. Let's where, go save
wherever
Catherine.
The action is. Right. Like, yeah. Hey, I'm going to save the day because he's done such a bang up job so far. Right. And, and Lamb is like, you know, get out. Get your own cab. I don't care that we're going the same direction. I'm not riding with you. I did what I had to do because you're one of my people. And that's as far as that goes.
Yeah, that was great. Mm-hmm. I've got to jump back to Shirley and Marcus because I want to close the loop on that. Because we see Shirley doing coke in the bathroom, right? She's trying to, but then Marcus calls her out because they found my favorite thing in the world, a murder board. There's not...
Yeah.
No series, no TV show is complete unless we get a good murder board, and we get one here. Sean Donovan's got one all over the, you know, and it, and then it's not a, it's not only one murder board. He's got two murder board, maybe three. We only saw the two. I don't know. Maybe he's got a third, because one is labeled phase one. The other is labeled phase two. We didn't get to phase three. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was there and they didn't show it. But I love a good murder board.
Really, like, lays it out there if you're struggling to follow along, right? Like, oh, this is the front plan, and this is the actual plan, right? Like, so follow along with me, phase one, right? Although, that being said, we had watched the first episode so long ago that we had to go back and look. And I needed a reminder of, what's his motive here for going rogue? And then I was like, oh, yeah, right. The very, very beginning.
Right. Well, because those first 10 minutes are so disconnected kind of from everything else that we've seen so far. So it and, you know, we talked about that last episode. It was like this mini movie. And then you get to the slow horses and everything. So, yeah, it was very disconnected. But also, so Harren, right? I mean, he loves to do that opening chapter. For sure. And then, wow, we're going to go and we won't loop back there for like, you know, another 200 pages.
Yeah, the book I'm reading now is doing that very thing.
Yes, you're reading the Secret Hours is the one you're reading right now, the latest one.
Yes, and I'm like waiting to get back to that beginning chapter. Like, what? circle back around. What's going on there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They find the murder board and we find out about the Grey Books, which is this great bit where it's like all of the craziest conspiracy plans out there in the world that MI5 has read about and debunked, basically. But that's apparently Donovan's endgame. And we get this little image, you know, I don't know if you caught it, but we see a picture of the ID of that quirky, weird dude we saw in the first episode when Taverner goes to the bunker of the files to see. And, you know, there's that weird dude like, oh, so glad to see you, Mom. And, you know, trying to show her around. And so he's there. So, you know, you see, okay, there's something there.
Mm.
I love a good murder board. You know, that's the one that you pause it and you go and look through there along with them because it's so good. But,
you know, it probably... You pause it and you look through the whole thing because those set dressers have really worked hard.
Spent hours and hours, right?
For the accuracy, for like the less than a second that you see it flash across the screen. And so it's the appreciation for the people behind the scenes.
Right? Shout out to that art department and the set dressers and all those folks that do that. Because like there's this article that Harren wrote and he was talking about when he got to go to the set the first season. And he goes into Lam's office. He sits down at the desk and he opens the drawers and there's stuff in there that like is appropriate to be there, right? And he just stole something out of there because he was so impressed by the dedication to detail.
The level of detail.
Yeah.
There are little things, you know, and Lam's office is like a gold mine of sort of what the books portray the real description. I mean, and Lam's office is one that gets described over and over again in the books, right? Where it's just, you can imagine like the giant stack of pizza boxes or whatever, the just takeout containers that are about to teeter over. It almost creates like... You see it and it's almost like you can smell what it probably smells like in there. It's one of those visual things that happen. So with the murder board, it does sort of lead the audience by the nose to a degree, but it brings you back to that very beginning scene. Oh yeah, right. This guy has something going on and then leads you into that, this whole idea of the Grey Books, which they don't leave for an episode for you to understand what that means. They explain it right away. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and Marcus and Shirley end up getting arrested. And it's just it was so funny because it was just like, you know, you see them, they're doing something really good. And then, of course, there's that heel twist turn where it all goes wrong, right? And the cops have arrested them. They don't believe they're MI5. And then and the cops, as they're looking through Shirley's stuff, right? You know, they're checking her. And they find the coke. And it's just like, oh, Shirley, you were going to maybe make it out of here. And then no, right? And she's like, oh, it was for a sting. Everybody's like, come on.
No, it wasn't. Right.
Well, and I love that Marcus, it's like the kids called in front of the principal, right? Yeah, they have to call Lam to get them out of trouble, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, yep, okay, that's fine. And then Marcus manages to get to the coke first and tells the cops to flush it. And she's just so pissed.
yeah. I mean, that's that little glimmer where you're like, oh, Marcus has her number just as much as she has his. You know, she has those little digs about his gambling throughout. And this was his moment to sort of one-up her, which in a way, it's the right kind of balance where she's at him sort of constantly. And every once in a while, he just nails her.
Yeah, it keeps him at a level playing field for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and he... Lamb lets them go, but says, tells the cops to give him a message. And all credit to the lady police officer that was there.
She was fantastic.
She was great. And she totally reveled in that, right? That last line. She says, "You're fucking fired. I've got fucking hemorrhoids more useful than you."
And she says it very, the delivery was
she was like,
beautiful on that.
Channeling Lamb right there.
Yeah.
Which was great. Yeah. Oh, that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, and so River, we talked about River getting kicked out of the cab. He ends up going to meet up with Louisa because Louisa is going to Chieftain, this security company, right? And so that's where we get the other kind of highlight of this episode because they go there. They're watching the place and they go inside and they see Spider and he's saying, oh, I need money, you know, give me money. I guess it was because he was supposedly saying that he was blackmailed over this and it was all this Tiger Team thing because he heard about that. But he gives them this whole song and dance. There's this whole thing. And then they go in the ops room, basically, for this place. And they walk in.
Spider is behaving as though he's been sitting there waiting to speak to someone.
Right.
And they won't let him through and so on and so on. Like, he's really playing it up.
Finally, they say, okay, come on. You all three can come through to see the Command and Control Executive Officer. That's the title. And River's like, God, that's a twatty title. Right. Which is the great when it's revealed that guess who is that?
That's
Command and Control Executive Officer. But Spider. I mean, I'm sorry. There's some folks that didn't like that. I loved that sequence where Spider just goes for it. All credit to Freddy Fox for that because he just totally played it so much fun. It was great. They're popping champagne. Yeah. I expected almost like kind of like a Bollywood dance number there.
It was so
totally
over
appropriate.
The top.
It was so over the top, but it was so perfect because it was perfect for him. That's exactly what I expect from the character of Spider. I mean, just like epic douchey performance from him on that. Like it was so wonderful.
Yes. And it's like he got him. He got River.
Well, and that's what he wanted, right? Because he felt like River got him kicked out. You know, they're like, hey, you can go to Slough House or you can leave the service. And so he leaves. And now he's making, you know, what did he say? Like six figures working for Chieftain. Yeah. He's going to get a big bonus from doing this. I mean, it's just like, oh, so gross. Yeah. He's just like,
and here's River like carrying around giant file folders and whatever else he's got to do. I mean, it's just depressing, right?
Well, but it's also like, I mean, it's so obvious, right? It's like such a counterpoint because there's no Spider was not in the service for the service. He wasn't there for anything other than the clout that he thought that he could get from being there.
Oh, sure. Right. Glamour and power and whatever. Yeah. River's there because it's like, it's his identity. It's who he is, right? Like it's what he's been immersed in his whole life. And so it's a really different motivation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you get the whole plan. Like there's... They show the dude who like had a laser pointer that was pointed at Spider's chest.
Oh God, right? It's terrible.
And then he's like, "What about your sister?" And he's like, "Oh, I haven't talked to her in years. She's a total bitch." They're doing everything to make you hate him, which plays into later, I think, very much so. But like, wow, you just totally hate this guy.
But you kind of there's some little bit. I think for me, that was like, oh, that was a good burn. He got him, you know? There was a little bit of like, wow, he went to a lot of effort for that.
It worked. And, you know, I do think if it well, and he's right, though, like, because Spider does have this moment where he's like, I picked you specifically because I knew you would fall for this. And he's not wrong.
Right.
For as much as River might hate it about himself, it's true. He's right. It's River was the exact right person to fall for that.
he played on exactly that difference in motivation for being part of the service, because River deep down really truly believes it's to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's important, and you're helping people. And I think Spider completely capitalized on that knowledge, like, oh, he's going to fall for this because he just can't look away if somebody needs, like, that's the whole reason why he's part of this.
Right. If Spider had gotten that text message in Slough House, he would have just deleted it. Right.
Correct.
I mean,
oh, 100%. Well, you think who else in Slough House would have acted on that? Ho would have deleted it.
Yeah. No, he would have, like, made it into a meme, right? He would have, like, posted
that's
it on
right.
it.
That's right. Shirley would have deleted it. She would have been like, who the fuck is this? I'm done. I'm out.
She wouldn't even realize that Catherine was there. Yes.
Right. Who's Catherine? Yeah. I don't know who this is.
Yeah. Right. No, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Louisa maybe, but she would have been enough skeptical to not fall for it, because she's maybe the smartest one.
Yeah, she would have talked to somebody else first. She wouldn't have impulsively.
As much as she wouldn't want to, she probably would have gone to Lamb, who would have been like, no, this is not what it is.
That whole sequence was great, but it's also great because it leads to Spider's kind of downfall, right? Because his boss, mm-hmm. Sly, calls him in and is like, what? This is a train wreck. Everything is going wrong. And he's so, like, oblivious, he can't even realize that things have gone wrong, right? He's like,
right.
No, that's fine. It's like, because it plays back to his whole thing. Motivation is money, right? And he's like, well, right. Just give him enough money and this problem goes away.
Right. Like, he can't even truly understand why River is the way he is. He just knows he can capitalize on it. But the idea that he thought he could buy this guy off, he had no idea. No idea.
Well, and that whole sequence, I mean, is great because Lamb has, we didn't talk about it, he puts the fear of God into Sly because he sits in his car and we get this great, I mean, it is a really fun sequence, right? Moment. Where he's sitting with Sly, the head of Chieftain, and he's just explaining what has happened. And then he farts in the car and walks away. And everybody, and he's like, you know, you might want to crack a window. I mean, that was really good.
Classic. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, everything about Lamb is so good. He offers them to keep his cigarette to try and kill the smell. Right. I mean, you know, we haven't talked a lot about Oldman yet, but man, he is so good.
He's so
everything
good.
About him. You know, I mean, and I was not sure about him at the start, but man, he's really making Lamb his own this season, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and he plays sort of this repulsive character. Like, he embodies this disgusting sort of persona. Like, he just, the way he looks is, it's like, maybe this is just me, but like, there's, you get a sense of how the smell is sort of around him. And it's sort of a pig pen from the Peanuts kind of feel, like, ooh, it's just kind of gross in the general vicinity around him, because, and he sort of revels in that and uses it always to his advantage, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think he's another one. And maybe that's what makes him and Catherine, you know, sort of circling back to that, like, maybe that's what makes them have a level of understanding with each other, because he doesn't fade into the background, but he uses the way he is to his advantage. And I think she, in a way, does the same, only in a much more subtle, fading into the background way. He's in the forefront, but people completely underestimate him because of the way he looks, and clearly the way he smells, and the way he carries himself, and just sort of how grotesque he is in every single way possible.
Yeah. That's why Sly is talking to Spider. And so Spider goes to meet with Donovan. And this is a scene that, I mean, so many different things for these characters going on there, right? I mean, Spider is showing his colors. You know, he thinks he can just use money to get away. And he thinks everybody is below him, right? I mean, that's the other thing. The privilege.
He's so disdainful of every person he encounters.
Yeah, he's so privileged that it's just, it's amazing that he has made it as far as he has, but part of it is it's also unsurprising, right? I mean, it's like the further he has gotten, the more buoyed he has gotten in his privilege, I feel like. You know, like, oh yeah, I got kicked out of MI5, but guess what? I'm making even more now, right? There's this certain, like, he's kind of falling upward kind of persona about him.
Yeah.
So that when he encounters Donovan, he thinks he can just order him around. But he's kind of underestimated things here a little bit, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, clearly.
Yeah. Well, and Donovan, you know, the actor that plays him has done just an amazing job. He's kind of got this kind of like inner just seething rage that, you know, only see come out every once in a while. But here we do, because Spider pushes him too far, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that was filmed and edited, wow, it was just so impactful, right? You know, because Donovan punches him, he smacks into the window and you just see this blood spatter and he's on the ground. And then Donovan's like, don't get up, be slow getting up, or whatever he says. It's just like, what he doesn't realize what has happened. Like, anybody watching this, Spider's dead.
Yeah.
There's no way he is getting up. He doesn't realize it until later, right? And then you're just like, wow.
But also, he doesn't seem fazed in a way, right? Like, he's sort of like, well, okay, so what now? Instead of any sense of panic or any, you know, he's like, all right, so how do I continue moving forward with the plan that I've actually had this entire time? And how do I fold this into that? And it is like Spider is so off the mark. He has no sense of what is motivating this guy to even be involved in any of this, which just sort of goes to he didn't do his homework.
He did do his homework, and that he, you know, knows that, you know, he says, right, oh, that he makes a reference to Allison, who we saw in that first episode, who died. And he says that, oh, she, you know, you're just up, you lost it after the girl that you were with killed herself. Which, you know, there, like, that's really like the rage-filling moment for Donovan. But, you know, it's just another sense of how Spider doesn't understand people, right?
Right. But the clues that Donovan was in for this for very, very different reasons. So the sister, Sarah, that she's one of the other people involved in the team. Like, there's so many sort of indicators that Donovan is fueled by the trauma and the loss and all of that Spider's complete, it's like he completely missed.
So he kills him, and then we see Lamb at lunch, which is just so great.
He walks into that classy restaurant looking the way he looks, behaving the way he behaves, smelling the way he smells. Like, it's the visual of him, I'm telling you, it's just like you just... And I have a very sensitive sort of sense of smell, right? Like, I pick up on a lot of very subtle smells. But the visual of Lamb in this, and especially this season, but I think leading right up to it always, like, the way Oldman is portraying him, there, it's this sort of visceral, like, ugh, I can feel it tingling in my nose, like, the way this man smells. And he walks into this restaurant, and you're like, everyone's head is turning because of the smell.
And he uses, this is another, you know, a nice little bit of Heron-esque misdirection, right? Because they say James Webb has arrived, right? And so that's the name he's used.
Yeah, he's so good at, it's those little moments where you're like, wow, he is one step ahead. Like, he's pieced something together in a way that gets him in where he needs to be. Yeah, it's very, very Lamb.
And that's right after we've already seen Spider dead, right? So there's that other element, like, well, that's definitely not going to be Spider unless he's walking in like a zombie, you know?
Yeah.
The whole sequence where he's sitting there, he's drinking the wine, he's like, oh, that's good. He's like, yeah, well, it costs more than a month's of your pay. So he's like, eh, okay. But, you know, he knows Judd. He's pegged him already, right? I mean, so there's that part.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. But the part that I really love is at the very end where we get Donovan pulls up in front of the restaurant. And here's the thing that you realize. God, he was like sitting there like with Spider sitting on his lap while he's driving dead. I mean, That's how messed up Donovan is.
Yeah.
But he just dumps him out in front of the restaurant and takes off, which is just...
Shocker.
Yeah, that was crazy. Mm-hmm. For me, that was like the kicker moment of that episode.
For sure. You knew he was dead. It was unexpected for him to be dumped in front of this restaurant where this whole meeting was happening. And it's interesting because Lamb's the only one who sort of takes it in stride.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yep, yeah, well, that was utterly predictable because that guy, you know, you knew he was going to screw it up at some point and end up this way. So, okay, great. And now what? Because you thought you had First Desk's number. You thought you had Ingrid Tierney's number. You thought you had Slough House's number. And this has spiraled out of control here. So what now?
Yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I can't leave without mentioning Roddy, who was pretty quiet this episode, but we did get that one moment where they're talking about the gray books, which is all these crazy conspiracies, and Roddy does get to say, you know, there's no way we've been to the moon. So utterly, you know, predictable Roddy moment, but he does get a couple of those lines in there that you gotta appreciate, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's so awful. And he's perhaps, I mean, and plenty of the characters lack a level of self-awareness. I think plenty of the characters, he might be the least self-aware person character in this entire thing.
You're hedging it a little too much, like the least self-aware person on the planet, right? I mean.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, he really does. Like, he says things as though it's just fact. Like, and it's so misogynistic and horrible and just like, ugh.
Yeah, so that's Roddy.
But there's something like so enjoyable about the sort of counterplay of the other characters against him. And even Lamb, like Lamb is like, he's useful for something. And so, right? Yeah. Like, he makes sense of that and he fits into the whole scene. But there's a limit, yeah, right?
Well, and I'm not going to get into book spoilers because I don't want to do that. But there's some things that we saw this episode that, especially when, you know, Catherine's getting taken into the safe house there, you're just like, oh, if you've read the books, wow, you're excited for what you're going to see coming up here. And I think there's also some good Roddy moments coming up in these next three episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to see what they do. I get the sense that they're going to stick a little bit closer to the book in some areas, and I'm excited to see it. And I think at folks that haven't read the books but are watching the show, it'll be very enjoyable.
Yeah, and the actor who's playing Roddy is, it's not the way I pictured Roddy when I was reading the books, but he is really nailing some aspects of that character just perfectly.
Yes, I'm with you. I think he's definitely, I mean, he's too pretty. He's too pretty for Roddy, right?
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
But at the same time, he understands the character in a way that I think is working.
Oh, for sure. He plays it in such a way that you're like, stop talking. Just terrible.
Well, and I can't let the restaurant go without mentioning that it does get a cameo appearance in the book that you're reading right now, Mary, Secret Hours.
Oh.
So, you know, for a little nod to this season in the new book, which I thought was fun little thing.
Yeah.
So just FYI for you, keep an eye out for that.
Okay, I will.
All right. Well, anything else that we didn't cover, Mary, that you wanted to make sure we talked about?
No, I mean, the episode started with, okay, I want to see what's happening next. And then it ends with, wow, okay, what? So let's put on the next episode. And then it was far too late in the evening for that to happen. So,
yes, well,
it does.
Get
it's
there.
It's very, very much like the books, leaves you wanting more. At the end of every chapter, you're like, oh, okay, I just want more.
Agreed. All credit to the writers and the showrunner. He's really done an amazing job. It's like you think of those folks that like kind of have managed to distill things down to the purity of what it is. And I feel like that's what Smith has managed to do with the show. He's read these novels. He's taken the essence of those novels and translated them to television in a way that I really appreciate. And so all credit to them there. Real Tigers is my favorite of the books, and I feel like they haven't messed it up, which is one of those things that you always worry about, right? You read your favorite book and you worry about it being on TV and you're like, are they going to mess it up? They haven't yet, so I'm really excited to see the last three episodes.
Yeah, and I think even the changes like it makes sense and it fit like so you know knowing that they can't there's no possible way to like represent the book any book visually in a way that's going to please every reader that has read that book, right?
Yeah,
and no. I think that, that the changes they've made have made sense. They've furthered the story. They've really doubled down on the characters in a way that's super fun to just see them leaning in to some of that. And to have the leeway to do that as an actor probably is... You don't get much opportunity to do that, I think, as an actor, to be able to really lean into... the characters that have been so well developed in the books.
I agree. And I think that all comes probably down from the top, right? I mean, you get the sense every season Oldman is getting grubbier and
yes,
grosser, right? I mean, he's like living it. And so I think that is yes. emboldening. Is that a word? I don't know. But they are. It's giving them a chance to kind of, the other characters are really taking that to themselves and looking to how they can do that with the other characters that they're playing. Mm-hmm. So I think that's only to our benefit as watchers. So
I agree. And I think that you see that very evident with Shirley and Marcus this season, that they were kind of like hovering a little bit and that they really pushed forward with those characters in a way that is representative of the way you feel they are in the books, mm-hmm. much more so this season, which is, I appreciate. I mean, I think you get sort of the picture of them when you're reading and to see how they're able to kind of push that a little further in the way that the TV series is going is exciting.
I agree. Well, I'm excited to watch the next episode. Guess what? We're doing it tonight. So we're going to be watching the next episode tonight. And I'm excited to see what happens. Thank you so much to everybody for listening. We will be back next week to talk episode 4. I've already got a guest lined up. We'll hopefully have that out a little earlier than this episode, so not so much of a gap, which should be good. If you enjoy the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show, or drop me a comment at Barbican Station on X, Twitter, or feel free to go to spywrite.com. That's where the episode posts. Leave a comment there. Until next time, thanks for listening. Like what you're listening to? There's more like it. Exploring the works of John le Carré, each episode of the Le Carré Cast looks at a specific novel or an unexplored aspect of his life and work. Join us as we take a deep dive into the world of espionage John le Carré has revealed. Search for Le Carré Cast wherever you listen to podcasts or at lecarrecast.com. Spybrary's Spy Rewind uses one episode of a classic spy TV show like Mission Impossible, Alias, or Get Smart to talk about the show as a whole. It's at spybrary.com or search for Spybrary in your podcast app. Like the Wolf is a podcast dedicated to the Nero Wolf mystery series created by Rex Stout. The podcast has reviews of all of his stories, plus interviews with a wide variety of Wolf fans. Find it in your podcatcher under Like the Wolf or at likethewolf.com. That's Wolf with an E. They're all novel podcasts, and you can find them all if you type novel.network in your browser. That's novel.network.